G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Adam White, the main man around here when it comes to content. Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning. Gareth is practicing his Japanese as we speak.
I can see him. He's here.
He's actually come on till 10:30.
I just see him in Studio 3.
He's doing something else as well. He's got another project on the go.
What's he doing?
No, I don't know. I asked him to come in. I asked him to come in and chat about who he's speaking to this morning, and he said he's busy at the moment. He's doing a pre-record. So hopefully he'll come in a little bit later on and explain what he's doing. All I know is that he's speaking Japanese.
Well, that some would say that's not uncommon.
No.
For Gareth. That's pretty much his language, full stop. Mm. That's what he does. But that is very, very exciting. Some of the update on the Japanese horses.
There's two of us that are dressed rather similarly. And there's one that's sort of missing out.
Well, I blame you for that.
I'm quite proud of this situation.
I blame you for that because Australia's greatest ever netballer, Sherelle McMahon, is a part of the Breakfast Club team, and she doesn't have a puffy jacket like we do. Sherelle, good morning to you.
A puffer vest.
A puffer vest.
I don't have a puffer vest.
You've got to say it like that too. A puffer vest.
Yeah, most disappointed, actually. I didn't need one over the weekend when I was on the Sunshine Coast.
For Netfest.
For Netfest.
Now, just for those playing at home, can you explain to us what Netfest is? Actually is. Because all I saw, Sherelle, I must admit, I'll put this up to the front very, very quickly. All I saw was you drinking cocktails in a toga. That's all I saw. All I saw, McMahon.
Oh, dear. That's not good. Now, it wasn't all about the toga party, although that was a big part of it. It's a mass participation event that Netball Australia run. They've been running it for the last 9 years or so. So there's around about 2,000 netballers descend on the Sunshine Coast. It was on the Gold Coast for a while. They play outdoor netball. They play netball on the beach. And it's just all about having fun, although some do get a bit serious and want to take out the title. But generally speaking, it's a
tournament of sorts, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I thought it was just a festival of togas.
No.
Maybe Mai Tais.
No.
There's
lots of different...
It's a cocktail.
That's a cocktail.
You wouldn't know. Bloody... We're talking alcoholic drinks with you. What a waste of time that is.
Or some sort of Chinese food.
But it was a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Well, it seemed like all I saw, again, I didn't see much netball. I just saw togas.
No, it wasn't.
Togas and drinks. You and Cox. Catherine, yes. Cox. I thought there was very, very interesting things.
No, it was... Well, we did have a lot of fun, and it is a great time. Everyone who was involved in Netfest absolutely loves it. And then I went to Sydney to be involved in the broadcast of the netball, the first match of the Constellation Cup between Australia and New Zealand. And
that was in New Zealand. What were you doing in Sydney?
Well, we were hosting from Sydney.
Right.
Hosting from Sydney. that didn't go to plan, though, did it?
No, we had a chat to Jay Weston the other day, Monday morning. She wasn't too distressed about it. She was up and about still.
She's always up and about.
Well, she is. She's a positive, energetic young woman.
She is.
Is there a problem starting to develop with this team and the inability to close things out, or what has happened, you know, if we go way back to last year with the Commonwealth Games, just in those big moments of not actually being able to seal the deal, or is this just the way it is at the moment?
It's a worrying trend, absolutely. Yeah. Because in each of those games, the Diamonds were in front and had the opportunity to win at different times. They were up by 5 on Sunday at three-quarter time and were run down by the Silver Ferns. The Silver Ferns are vastly more experienced in terms of international test matches under the belts of the players who are out there. So, you know, potentially that plays a bit of a role in it in terms of how they play those big moments. But we heard from Jo Weston, she's up and about still, and they should be. They've got some great talent there. But I would think internally there's just a bit of, hang on, next time it's tight, we really do want to take it out. Because the Commonwealth Games final, lost by 1 to England, the World Cup final, lost by 1 to New Zealand, and this first game of this Constellation Cup, and, you know, some may say that this is not a big thing, but it was a big thing. There was a lot of talk about how both teams were going to respond after their experiences at the World Cup, and unfortunately, it's the same result, down by 1.
But I didn't think this was supposed to happen with New Zealand. I thought they were going through a bit of a dip that, you know, that they weren't the team that they were, and Australia was much better than them, but it seems to have turned around quite quickly.
Well, they weren't the team that they were. They didn't medal at the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games, which is the first time that has ever happened in a major tournament to New Zealand. So they then brought on super coach Nolene Tarua.
Tarua. Yes, I love the way you say that.
And, you know, she's done fantastic work with the Sunshine Coast Lightning, two premierships, and then back to the grand final this year. They didn't win, but took them back to the grand final, and she was able to work wonders with them. So they've gone from being beaten by Malawi at the Commonwealth Games last year to winning the World Cup the following year. It's actually, the story is incredible about how they did turn that around. And yeah, there's something to, you know, as much as I hate the Silver Ferns, there's something to really like about what they're doing at the moment.
It's probably something we need to park for the time being, Daniel, because I know that Mark Stevens is very passionate about his netball. He's got some, he'll have some hard-hitting questions to ask.
Normally he would, I think, but because there's such a big day in football, he probably won't have enough time.
He might be distracted.
I don't think he would be. I think netball sits that high on his repertoire of,
I'm not so sure about that. Steve, we'll be in after 7, of course, the last day of the trades. But, of course, tonight we've got game two of the Consolation Cup and yes. Les Alexander's 100th test. We spoke to Jo about perhaps a cake or something, some sort of build-up to that. Yes. She gave us. She said there's something on the offing.
There was something that was being made, like a jewellery-type item or something that was being...
Oh, is that where you took that conversation?
Well,
jewellery.
Well, something that wasn't going to be available for the 100th test, which... is a little bit of a setback.
Well, you don't want to go early, just in case.
Well, that's right. Anything can happen.
That's sort of heading into Father's Day territory for me.
Sorry to bring it up. Goodness gracious. Oh, goodness. Back to your introduction, Whitey. Where is Sherelle's puffer jacket? Because we're getting some feedback where puffer jacket people, oh no, off the SMS, which is...
Oh, they're feeling sorry for me. They should.
No, I think they're having a crack at us.
They're feeling sorry for you for having to wear it.
You've got to go and get your fitting later on today. It's quite funny at the moment because they have arrived for everyone that works at the station and others, apparently. Matt Stewart's been selling them at the Caribbean Gardens.
Oh, well, that's...
And there's been a couple of people that have been sheepishly going in there to do the sizing, and they've been putting on a particular size for it not to be fitting and having to go to the higher, the bigger size.
Right.
And there's not too many bigger sizes left. Yet there's still some bigger people that haven't got vests yet. So we might be out of a particular size and have an abundance of another size.
So we're going to need you to take one of the small ones, please. If you don't mind, McMahon.
Okay, sure.
You've taken yours off.
It shouldn't be. Well, I'm a bit warm. It's a warm puffer. It's 75 degrees in here, by the way.
It actually is very warm. Normally rugged up like nothing else in here, and I'm,
It's one of the great rooms in the world, this studio. It's either the Bahamas or Antarctica.
There's nothing in
between. It's quite remarkable, really.
I'm quite warm, but it's such a beautiful jacket. It's just so... Sooner
Yeah, but you're going to start sweating soon, and that's... I know. No one wins out of that.
Because it is the sort of the almost like the Gore-Tex that George Costanza wore in the Seinfeld episode.
It's almost sort of John Kennedy Sr. Gabardine, the big long green jacket.
It does remind me of a... Can I tell a quick story? It's quite
funny.
Tell
you a quick story.
It's funny.
We'll be the judge of that.
Exactly right. Brings me back to the mid to late 90s. It was a very cold and wet night. In the middle of winter.
Often happens.
And I was at home, and I got the call up that a few of my friends were going to the Cheers bar. Have I told you the story?
I know this story.
And
Cheers in Hawthorne. Great venue. Toss the Boss.
It's like a Cheers. It was. It was Cheers.
Toss the Boss, Jarrell. They were the days.
They were the glory days.
With Toss the Boss?
Toss the Boss. You go to the bar, and whatever you order, they toss the coin, and if it comes up whatever...
If you call
heads and it comes up heads, you don't have to pay.
Yeah, that's right.
If it comes up tails, you've got to pay for the whole thing. So you really run the gauntlet. If you're doing the group shout, you're going for six. Come on, heads. Come on, heads. Jeez,
like a $50-$60 turnaround at times.
It's a big result.
Anyway, so this particular night was very cold. I was at home watching television, doing something boring, and was just in my tracksuit pants. And my auntie worked at Esprit, and as a result of working at Esprit, we got a lot of Esprit clothes. Now, Esprit is more a female type garment place.
Yeah, brand.
Brand. Mm-hmm. That's it. That'll do. And I was wearing you know how sometimes you have undergarments, just T-shirts you would wear under a hoodie or under a jumper or something
that
like
are that. Not meant to see the light of day.
Correct. That's right. Exactly right.
Yes.
So I wasn't going to go. I wasn't going to go out. I couldn't be bothered. I wasn't dressed appropriately. Whatever. Anyway, I was convinced to go. So, okay. So I put on some jeans, left the spray top on because I couldn't be find anything else. And I put, it was very cold and wet outside. I put a significant jacket on, which was described as potentially an anorak. And went
an
to Cheers.
Well,
it's very cold outside.
What?
It's very cold outside.
An anorak.
Because that's what you wear to Cheers, wouldn't it? You'd wear that to a nightclub, wouldn't you? Or a bar?
It's probably anorak. Where I got it all wrong from very early days. So I go in, get to Cheers, go in. It was raining. It was very cold.
I went to Cheers quite a bit. I don't think I ever saw anyone in an anorak.
I never saw an anorak.
Well, it wasn't quite an anorak, but it had that sort of
feel, you know, about it.
Feel and look to it, certainly.
Definitely an anorak.
Anyway, as the night progresses, it gets quite hot in Cheers.
Yes.
To a point where I'm overheating. But because I'm only wearing an Esprit female-oriented type of T-shirt, I couldn't take my jacket off. And the whole night, everyone's saying,
Aren't you hot? Go, oh, no.
No, fine. Nah. Just had a bit of a cold, I'm fine. And to the point where I was always melting, I was passed out. And I had to leave the scene. But I couldn't take the jacket off because I didn't want to. It was pink. It said Esprit pink on a white T-shirt. I couldn't take the jacket off with nothing underneath. Now, Andrew Mays could walk around with a pink Esprit T-shirt and get away with it. I couldn't do that. I was hot.
I think you could.
I was really, really hot. I thought I was going to pass out in a really congested environment. I couldn't take the jacket off.
I'm getting some feedback via the SMS machine. This Esprit story is basically cross-dressing, which is troubling. I can't believe he could sustain that effort in 3-inch heels. That says another one. That must have been there. Were you wearing the 3-inch heels that night?
No, I wasn't. I was. You know what I would have been wearing back then? It was always boat shoes.
I was going to say the boat shoe.
Jeans, and it was like a V-neck navy jumper, probably, with the white Esprit T-shirt underneath.
Goodness gracious me.
Oh, dear.
So, we haven't got an Esprit jumper, but we've got a little puffer vest for you, Sherelle.
Oh, I do actually get a puffer vest.
You can wear that to Cheers. I'd love to see you walk in with the puffer, the RSN 97 puffer. It's a win for everyone. Front page news on the Herald Sun today is interesting reading because the headline says, Doping ban stitch up. SADA documents cast fresh doubt on probe. Of course, talking about the Essendon situation. Drug listed as banned only after used by Dons. Now, Sherelle, we were reading this with great interest this morning when we got into the orifice. And interestingly, the TB4, the Thymosin Beta-4, which was the substance at the centre of the scandal in the end for the Essendon situation, looks like it was only logged as banned the day before Essendon self-reported. So we read this morning.
Yes, which is very interesting, isn't it? Although the word coming out of WADA is that this substance, which has been at the centre of this Essendon saga, has actually been underneath a different category, banned underneath a different category, but just not explicitly banned as this substance itself. So that can happen with this list. There's some areas that are a bit of a catch-all to say this type of substance is banned under the code because they don't always know every single substance that is out there. So there's sometimes in certain areas a bit of a catch-all. But the interesting thing is that literally the afternoon before Essendon self-reported, apparently, according to the documents, this substance was added, which the timing for me is very interesting.
Yeah, well, the questions that arise on the back of that is that it was suggestions it was an attempt by some staff to shore up evidence after the fact for the Bombers situation. That's one of the suggestions for the cynics out there. Now, Ben McDevitt, who was the former Asada boss, claimed that Thymosin Beta-4 was kept under two general classifications of banned substances of the code at the time. That's since been shut down, that you can't do that twice, that you're going to be captured under one classification, not two. So there's a whole lot of interesting information that's coming out. It does seem interesting, Whitey, because Sherelle's point is what she said before is absolutely right, that a SADA statement last night, just talking about this once they were approached, said that Thymosin Beta-4 was a prohibited substance since the commencement of the 2010 WADA prohibited list. It does seem interesting timing, or the fact that we don't know this. We didn't know this till now, considering there was so much detail involved in the challenges legally at all levels. Why we only find out about this now would raise questions about the defence of the Essendon players as well, wouldn't it?
I think it raises a lot of questions. And I think the thing about all of this is that, and the timing of it's interesting in regards to, you know, when it was put on the list and you know, when it wasn't on the list or was on a different list, is that when Essendon self-reported, my understanding from that was that they didn't know what they were taking, but they kind of said, look, we want you to look at it. We're not sure.
As opposed to
hey, we've broken the rules here. Yeah, we're in trouble. It was, look, things have come to light that we're a little bit uncomfortable about, we're not sure about. They'd had some discussions, and in the end they said, look, and see what's going on here. This might have got a little bit out of control. And I'm simplifying things, but that's my understanding of what happened at the time. So if this is the case, that starts to get a bit interesting.
Yeah, but that is correct. I just would think that through all the forensic analysis and investigation that the defence teams would have gone through it, AFL, ASADA, WADA, and then the Court of Arbitration for Sport, how this is new information is quite staggering in itself.
And like we were talking about this before we got on air, and so well, what will happen? And I've got no idea. But the problem is that so much of it has happened, you know, in the sense that Essendon got kicked out of the finals. We know the players were banned for a year. That's all happened. So there's not much that could potentially be overturned other than Joe Watson getting his Brownlow medal back.
Well, and the only reason this sort of thing...
Two off the others. That's right.
And the only reason this is coming to light is because of the ongoing challenge against a verdict by Nathan Lovett Murray.
Yes, that's important
information. So this is why it's all coming back up again now, because they're finding out, apparently, perhaps more information. Maybe that's why it's coming out now. We don't know. So you're right, though. All the implications and the effect that it's had on all these men and athletes who were involved across this area, it's all been done and dusted. But I guess from Nathan Lovett Murray's perspective, he firmly believes that he didn't do anything wrong and he wants his name cleared. And I don't blame him for that.
No, absolutely.
That's what he believes.
Absolutely. And knowing quite a lot of these players very well through this process and still now is that they keep saying... We were told on such a regular basis that the thing that we were taking was fine. And they did ask a lot of questions about it. They kept saying, look, we don't want you telling other people what you're doing because we think we're getting a competitive advantage here, but it's all above board. And they kept asking questions about it. And even when it emerged, the news emerged on that day about which club it was that was involved, initially the club wasn't reported.
Yep.
The Essendon players were very relaxed about it all. They didn't think it was their club because they thought that they were okay.
Well, I mean, you know, I look at the elite training environment that these people are in and I reflect on my experiences there. You put your trust in your doctors and whoever is running different things at the club. That's who you go to check things with. So if they can... constantly being told it's okay. I mean, that's where the tricky thing comes in for these people.
Yeah, and I think half the difference, and I know that a lot of people want to sort of compare the footballers to track and field athletes or whatever, but one of the differences was that it was a team sport versus an individual sport where, in a collective sense, everyone put faith in a doctor and because it was part of a club, part of a team.
Absolutely.
As opposed to an individual buying... Yeah. stuff from other countries on the internet thinking that it would be okay. They did ask all the questions and collectively, unless they didn't like needles, they were doing it because they kept repeatedly told that it was okay.
Unless they didn't like
needles. Well, there were a couple that didn't like needles, so they didn't take it.
Yes, interesting.
And they were able to keep playing.
It's very interesting revelations, I think we all think. Interesting revelations, the timing of it, the chronology of this information that's come to hand recently, in the last 24 hours, I imagine, and how it's got to this point, how we know new stuff now. I'm staggered by that, I must admit, considering the analysis and the forensic defence that was going on from so many quarters.
For a long time, far out.
Fire most that. And beat a four. We haven't said that for a while, have we?
Very interesting. Very interesting. So we'll see where it ends up. It'll certainly be a talking point because it's been an emotional topic for many years now for footy fans, particularly if you're involved in the Essendon Football Club or have emotional allegiance to the Essendon Football Club. So this will raise some conversations today, you'd think, from that fraternity particularly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it ruined people's lives. Mm. There were a lot of players that went back and played but never had the same enjoyment for the game. You could argue the same enjoyment for life there for a while because it just made them about football. And there were a lot of players that were never the same players even when they came back and played because they just felt that they were wronged.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We'll see what happens on the back of it. But certainly interesting revelations today. Now, the Socceroos, by the way, as we move on to football of another code, last night played Chinese Taipei. We spoke to Adam Peacock about this yesterday, and when we asked whether or not it would be a bigger challenge than Nepal, because it's not Nepal. Did you know there's not Nepal?
I didn't, but I was...
It's Nepal.
Nepal.
We didn't know this. He said no.
Are you sure that's right?
Well, he knows stuff, Peacock. He does.
Yeah, but we are going against what the world thinks.
Well, maybe the world hasn't asked the question.
It's like
maybe the world's got ahead of themselves. The world's got ahead of themselves.
Maybe.
And just thought we're better than Nepal, and we didn't even bother asking. Maybe that's what's happened. Anywho, he said, nah, won't be an issue.
Yeah.
Turns out it wasn't an issue, Sherelle.
No.
Just the 7 past the Chinese Taipei team last night. 7-1 was the end result as the Socceroos continued to progress through their World Cup, very, very, very early stages of World Cup qualification. So well done to the Socceroos last night in Chinese Taipei. It's good business.
Good business, yep. And that's the nature of these sort of games, isn't it? That there are going to be some early that are absolute smacking.
Yeah, this level of... It's like... who was the team that we played where Archie scored 13?
American
Was that American Samoa? Yeah. So it's not quite American Samoa territory.
No.
But it's not far off. And we're okay, and they're not very good, is I think where we...
It didn't appear that the game captured the imagination of the local Chinese Taipei people.
No, there wasn't... Like, it wasn't splitting at the seams, the stadium, it must be said, when it comes to patronage.
What would they be called? Chinese Taipeians?
Well, it's in Taiwan.
Right.
So the Taiwanese, I imagine. Is that what happens?
I'm not the person to ask. It's not a country I'd frequent, so you're more an Asian countryman.
Well, I am. I have been in recent times. I don't know what... I think they're...
If you were from Chinese Taipei, what would you be known as?
Well, they played in Taiwan.
Chinese Taipei.
Yeah, but then just because they played there doesn't mean...
But why wouldn't they play in Chinese Taipei? What is Chinese Taipei?
Help!
It's a bloody good question.
Wait and see how it all plays out. There's a fair bit of time to go and a lot of other deals to fall as well, so we're just one of those. But so far, like I said, the dialogue's been really professional. I think everyone's looking for a good outcome and a fair deal, so we're pretty optimistic.
James Gallagher there from the St Kilda Football Club talking about Brad Hill amongst a host of players that they would be hoping to gain access to and acquire through this last day of what has been an exhaustively boring trade period.
Yes.
Mark Stevens from Channel 7 has been sniffing it around for all the latest news throughout that exhaustively boring period. He joins us this morning with caffeine for the first time in history. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, great to be here. Half Sherelle and Whitey. Yeah, it has...
What's so good to see you with coffee.
Yeah.
Let's bugger the footy for a second.
Excited. My coffee footy. Man really looked after us. Footy. What's the best word to sum up the trade period?
Is it? The coffee you just bought us. That's the most important and most interesting part.
What?
Of it.
It's turgid.
What's
turgid?
I like
good
it.
Word.
Yeah. What's your coffee, Steve? For those out there that enjoy their coffee,
yes.
you're going with something from left field.
It's a magic with skim milk. Magic. If you ask for a magic now anywhere in Melbourne, the barista knows what you're talking about. I'm sure at Half's Cafe.
We love our magics at Mabel Jones, 67 Grimshaw Street in Greensboro.
But I'm surprised that Sherelle, this is totally news to her.
Well, it is, because I often order a three-quarter latte because I want less milk. But that's exactly what it is. So I'm going to try it, and I'm going to be so angry at you when the barista just laughs at me.
You've got to have courage to start with first. You're a bit self-conscious to ask for a magic.
This is not a thing.
I'm
there
now
is
on a
no
roll
way this is a thing.
Yeah.
No way.
Mabel Jones, they're going out the door. I
want to know if anyone else, SMS us, tell us. Has anyone else ever ordered a magic?
Right, 0416 90 50 52.
From the local cafe.
Well, they will be. They will be at Mabel Jones this morning. They're flying out the door. pop in and say good day to
Dave. Whitey's got no idea what we're talking about.
No, he doesn't. He loves hot chocolate. Did you get him a hot chocolate?
Yeah, I did. It's actually quite good.
Oh, nice.
Whitey's, he's a chain man. Muffin break type of guy, wouldn't he?
Absolutely.
Muffin.
No doubt about that.
Hot chocolate and a muffin
he's
for
a food
550
court
or something.
Creature.
Donut King sort of fella.
Yeah, Donut King. Yeah.
I own that.
BB's.
Wendy's.
Wendy's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Milkshake with the crushed.
Yeah, the flake.
Crunchy on top.
Yep.
Oh, crunchy.
Wow. Yeah.
With just next level sort of stuff.
It's not helping our regime. It's not
well,
for
you
us.
Know what's happened to the regime.
It's not for us.
You know what's happened to
now,
the regime.
Now, we're moving forward strongly, we are. We're strong in the mind. That's what
and
we
you
are.
Got, you guys got new puffer jackets, I see. Well, I'm waiting for mine.
Puffer
jackets. It looks quite sponsored by Puma and everything.
It's good, isn't it?
Fantastic.
I almost look modern, don't
so
I?
So mine's still in a bag out the front
yeah,
there,
it is. You've got one.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yours is an extra small because it's the only one left.
Yeah, right.
All the sizes are taken.
Okay, what's why?
All the larger sizes have departed the building.
Steve-O, where do you want to start? Because it's end of trade day, but there's another story that's making headlines.
Well, I think we
today.
Should start with Essendon. I've just got to say, wowee. Oh, boy, it's back. No, really. We thought it had gone away, didn't we?
Well, we did, absolutely. I forgot it actually happened until today.
So virtually 7 years on.
7 years.
New revelations, really, today that Asada... The drug involved in the whole Essendon saga wasn't on the Asada banned list.
Until, well, it wasn't on the website.
Yes.
As banned.
On the website until an Asada official logged in and just quietly changed it.
The day before the
day before Essendon self-reported.
Mm.
So
very interesting.
Interesting. But my take
so
on this...
So how could that happen? What?
Well, it's an oversight on online and an oversight from a paperwork or regulations point of view. It's an I that wasn't dotted and a T that wasn't crossed. But my take on this is this story sort of underlines the shambolic nature of Asada, perhaps on the run, being undermanned, under-resourced and out of their depth, more so than changing anything about the Essendon 34 because it was still on the WADA banned list from 2010.
Yes.
So I would have thought the WADA ban list. The WADA ban list is next level.
Well, that's the
umbrella.
We like to call that the catch-all.
The catch-all. So this is disturbing, and I think if you're an Essendon person and supporter, who I do feel very sorry for all those players, it brings up a lot of bad memories. But I just don't think it changes anything in a massive way. And I've just put a text message in to Richard Ings, who's the king of all these things. Mm. Richard does a lot of...
It's been quiet for a couple of years now because there's not much to talk about for Richard.
Richard's he's in for a busy day.
Yes, I feel he might be.
But I believe he's...
a few quotes in the paper.
Yeah, his take on this will be that, it's administrative issues with Asada. It's an issue there for them and the way they'll run at the time. But it doesn't change the fact that... that Essendon's players were banned and Job Watson lost the Brownlow. I mean, there's thoughts today, Whitey, that maybe Job should get the Brownlow back. I don't think this would enable that to happen.
Well, as half said, if Job got his Brownlow back, then they've got to take it off Sam Mitchell and Trent Cotchin. So, I think it's got to play out a little bit.
But I think, to be clear, to your point, it actually did sit under a banned substance. So it actually was part of that. It just wasn't explicitly named as a substance that was banned itself. So it was still under the umbrella of a banned substance.
It's unfortunate
it
wasn't
that
on
makes
the list.
Sense, doesn't it? Half.
Yes.
That's the right way of saying it.
But if you're going to think of using that half, would you not check the WADA list as well?
Oh, well, who knows, Steve? I wouldn't have been using it in the first place, so I don't know. I don't know how you get to that point. To be honest with you. But I would have thought that this would have been, as I said before, Steve, when we were discussing this earlier this morning, that this would have been revealed a long time ago, this information.
It is
how it comes
isn't
out
it?
Now, I'm staggered by it.
Yeah,
all those legal eagles.
Yeah,
they get
all
their
forensic analysis and detailed research they did for all those years.
Yep.
And now, who is it? Bloody Mickey Warner finds it.
Yeah, obviously there's a case for Nathan Lovett-Murray and his team have uncovered. And... which is good luck to them, but half, there were so many people working on this. QCs, Hurdy had his men. It may have made a difference. It may not have been been a knockout blow, but
it
would have certainly made
still,
a difference to the narrative and the way things unfolded, for sure.
It's very, very interesting is what it is, and I think there'll be some conversations on the back of it.
But the timing of it...
But nothing changes, as you rightly say.
Well, at this stage, nothing changes, and I think the AFL will probably have a similar line today. Look, it's so unfortunate. I mean, James Heard will no doubt be interviewed today. I mean, there'll be people chasing around getting the latest on this half for sure.
Be back outside his driveway.
I would hope not.
Well, I think James Heard's opinion on this half will be telling today. Very interesting. So I think he's moved on, but I do feel for all the Essendon people involved in this because clearly there was more going on with Asada Whitey. Some fiddling in the background of websites and lists. And
it seems to be the case. Let's get on to the trades.
You don't rate that as a story?
No, absolutely is a story. Absolutely is a story. But I think, you know, today we can actually talk about the trades because it is the last day.
Yeah, it's actually going to
happen. It's actually the only day I'm actually interested in talking about it, I must admit.
Yeah, but...
Can we Google the word turgid?
I'm just going to Google this. By the way, Chinese Taipei is just Taiwan. So going back to our discussion,
I was
before.
Listening to that. I got shamed into the coffees because I was actually tuned in.
Yeah, well, that's why I did it. Because I knew you were listening.
Hang on, we shame you every single week when you come in here with your own coffee.
I just happened to flick. I was flicking around.
We always do it after.
Oh, right.
We've never done it before.
I was on Hoddle Street at the time. So what are they? The Taipeians?
No, they're Taiwanese.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just disturbed when I listen
in
to
sport,
them, Whitey said
Taiwan is Chinese Taipei.
The something against going to Asia. I just can't believe that, Whitey. That was the most disturbing thing I've heard today.
He's missing out big time.
Anyway.
He's changing the subject again.
Yeah, because I'm not interested in Asian countries. I'm interested in the trades.
Turgid. Swollen and distended or congested.
Yep.
Tediously pompous or bombastic, depending on which one you want to
say. I think that's perfect. All those words are actually summing
bombastic.
Up.
So,
bombastic is a great word.
Well, clearly the trade period needs to be over 3 days because we've had a situation here where clubs have been posturing now for many, many days and we finally get to the last day and all these things where they've been sort of holding out, bit of a stalemate, they've actually got to do things today and probably there'll be 15 or 16 that'll go through just today.
Yeah.
Maybe you read it that way?
I think there'll be 20-odd today. So Brad Hill's virtually done. That'll be ticked off. So St Kilda have landed another man. Josh Bruce virtually done overnight. There's been some movement on that one, Whitey. But we're all waiting really on Joe Danaher. And you talk about turgid. That the talks there are just...
And what's your feeling on
constipation
that?
Constipation in overdrive. Is it? They need...
It's a Metamucil.
Yeah, we need a... what is it? The Laxette.
Laxative.
Yeah, the Laxette. Somebody needs to just hand a Laxette to both Adrian Dodoro and Charlie Gardner because at this stage, it's not going to happen, unfortunately, Whitey. Although history says just at the end things will change, but the mail is that it's less than 50%.
I reckon it's about 20%.
Yeah. It's just too hard. I think the mail last night, again, is Essendon would be happy with Isaac Heaney and pick 25.
Oh.
You can't see that happening.
Isaac Heaney?
Well, he's New South Wales born and bred. He's the heartbeat of the team.
I wouldn't have thought they'd get Isaac Heaney.
That's what they want.
Yeah, of course they do. It's very interesting. Yeah. The whole Danaher thing's interesting because you're buying what's on the clock. You're not buying the brand new edition anymore. You're buying what's on the clock. And what's on the clock, there's plenty of K's on the clock. And it's been better than bruised if you the body of the chassis of the car. There's no way you're getting Heaney for Joe Danaher plus a pick.
But they won't. I mean, I think it doesn't matter what I think. But Heaney, even if it was Heaney for Danaher, Sydney aren't going to do that.
No.
So to make it Heaney and a pick,
no,
they're not going to do that. Happen. Obviously, so, but and that's why there's a stalemate half because Essendon wants players. Sydney are offering. Picks that aren't really going to justify getting it done anyway.
Well, 5 and 25 is a good deal, I reckon. Is that not a good deal?
It's semantics. I think it's 5 and 16, 5 and 18, something like that. Late first round.
I just don't know if it's two first rounders. I just can't get my head around that.
Yeah, I mean, his last full season, he was an All-Australian. And
which was 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But even in the games he played last year... He dominated the games he played, even though he played 4 or 5 of them.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it's absolutely buyer beware. But the whole reason why he is being potentially overrated by Essendon is he's in contract. So that means that to actually prize him out of there is going to take more than it would be if he was out of contract.
Is it the right thing to do for a club who has a player like this who clearly wants to go? I mean, we do see it happen occasionally. Is it the right thing for them to hang on to them? No. Are they going to get the best out of Joe Danaher next?
No, I don't think so.
Tim Kelly did pretty well for Geelong.
Well, that's right. That's one example.
Mm.
Yeah, he did. Slightly different. Why do you think?
Why is it different?
Yeah.
Well,
he was desperate to get home last year.
Yeah, yeah, they smoothed it over, didn't they? But then he went the following year. So can Essendon afford to go through this again?
Ooh. Because he'll be a restricted free agent next year. So if Essendon want to, they could match Sydney's bid and it goes into a trade next year.
Look, they can't continue to hold him against his will out there at Tullamarine. What are they going to do, tie him up in a cage as well? I mean,
I'd be disappointed if that happened.
But at some stage, you've just got to let him go. And hopefully they can get the deal done half. I think it's 50-50.
Why hopefully?
Well...
Seemingly what Joe wants.
That's what I keep
I feel for Joe in this. I mean, he's at the end, he's got to the stage where it's quite a big call for him to ask for a trade from Essendon.
Yeah, and I think that can't be underestimated.
Yeah.
What the courage... Not, well, courage is probably thrown... There's all forms of it, I suppose. The courage of him to ask for a trade. Being a Danaher, being a contracted player, being a one of their star players, or former star player when he was playing... it's a big call for him to make that with his history, with his family history, let alone his history at that football club.
So this wouldn't be a decision that was made lightly. It's just an interesting decision to make it really difficult for that to happen from Essendon's perspective.
But is Essendon making it difficult or is Sydney making it difficult?
Well, I think 5 and 25 is a fantastic deal. Take it.
Understand Essendon's view that from a list management strategy... They don't want picks.
No, I understand that. I do understand that.
So they believe that he's still is Essendon's franchise player. Mm. I would suggest he's the highest paid player at Essendon. If not, he's right that he'd be in the top three.
Yep.
Well, Dylan Shield would be fairly high.
He'd be high, but I'm not sure he'd be as high as Joe. He'd be around about that mark. But again, as you say, rightfully half, he has these injury issues that may never come good.
And this is...
They have a history.
But if Sydney wants him, Sydney pays for him.
Yeah, but you don't go stupid.
And then he doesn't go.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. We'll see what happens today. Mm. But what the further conversation about this is, does this have any link to the Papley deal? Like, if the Danaher deal doesn't get done, does Papley get to
Carlton? Yeah, it does. I spoke to Carlton last night, and they're just sitting and waiting because the feeling is that if Sydney can't get a deal done on Danaher, they'll save face by saying, well, we didn't get Danaher, we now need to keep... Papley.
Why are they... So are you saying they're only linked because they don't want to have no Danaher and no Papley? Is that the only reason why
I think that's
linked?
A key factor. And also picks and what happens there. So I think that is a factor, Whitey. They wouldn't want to be seen to miss out on Danaher and then lose Papley on the same day.
It's not great PR.
The two things that are so frustrating through this period is the overratedness of draft picks... And the overratedness of PR-ness.
It's all noise.
It'll all go over. It'll all blow over in 5 minutes, and we'll just get on with whatever list you've got. Do you agree that draft picks are absolutely overrated in this time? That they haggle over pick 52 versus 58, and then it comes draft night. Oh, geez, that player slid for us. We're very lucky there.
Or they pass anyway.
Great leadership qualities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great leadership qualities. Lucky to get him. Can't believe he slid that far.
Yeah, that's right. So draft.
Having said that, I have experienced that myself at a draft, and it does happen sometimes that they do slide. You think, oh, they're still there. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and Dougal Howard, hasn't he become a good player?
Dougal's a effectively
he is a good player, but gee, people get overblown, don't they?
Effectively, the Saints have effectively paid pick 18 or 19 for him. Is that right?
They've got Ryder as well.
He was deeper 40-odd. Was that about the number for 40? I can't quite remember the details in front of me, for the Saints deal yesterday. So they swapped 10 and 12. They got Howard effectively for 18 and 19 and Ryder for the other pick that was changed in that, which is about wrong.
Port of Adelaide wouldn't have wanted to not have Dougal Howard.
No, that's Dougal a setback.
Yeah,
but they did, in fairness to Dougal and to contrast that opinion a touch, they're playing him a position that he didn't really want to be playing.
Or thought he'd be playing.
They promised him defence, and all of a sudden he's playing in the forward line. Now, hang on a second, what's going on here? You said this is where I was, this is where I'm happy.
Is that reason to get traded, though? I mean, if that's the case, a lot of people...
If someone's going to offer you 5 years at 600 to play in the position you want to play, I reckon that's a pretty good reason.
Yeah.
Apparently the deal's a $3 million deal for 5 years.
Yeah.
For Dougal.
The Saints are doing well, aren't they? Are they a destination club half or a club prepared to pay overs?
I wonder if this would have been...
Answer that one.
Good question.
Now, Brett Ratton is good clearly question. Having an impact. What was the question? Sorry, I was somewhere
else. Are they a destination club with the new Moorabbin facility?
And
a new coach. Or are they a club willing to pay overs?
Not willing. They're prepared. Able to.
Yeah.
financially, like contract-wise?
Yeah, because of their, where their list is at, they can actually pay overs to players because they've got cap room and they can do it.
Yeah, well, I think there's an element of that, but I think the move back to Moorabbin is a significant development in the history of the St Kilda Football Club, certainly the recent history. I don't think this happens at Seaford. I don't think what's happening at the moment happens at Seaford.
So it was that bad at Seaford, you think, even with the money? Dougal Howard looks out there driving down the East Link?
I reckon this, none of this, or this certainly this level of transaction that they're going through this period.
But it wasn't that bad out there, Half.
Ask the players.
Yeah.
I don't think this happens. Brett Ratton's a part of this, but Moorabbin is a key component.
You had to drive past that fake motel every day. You had to do your head in the hotel. Yeah.
I had my kids going for years.
I'm so confused on that.
We're
going
to pop in a scene.
You're going to stay there one day.
You're going to pop in on the way home and just stay there.
I don't get it.
It's easily the greatest waste of money in the history of the world, isn't it, that?
That's magnificent. Travellers, weary travellers, just pop in. Pop in for the night. $60.
Money wasted.
Yeah, how much was that, Whitey?
We too much.
It's a
whatever it was.
Point.
Should be an RSN
in
investigation.
Interest.
Is there anything in. Is it hollow or is it solid?
No, lots of great beds and little en suites.
There is actually a staircase inside the hotel.
Right. We've got to get up to the top somehow. Worry about the Adelaide Crows, because Matthew Nix is the new coach of the Adelaide Crows. It's been very well received, this news, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Congratulations, Matthew. Welcome.
Good morning, guys. How are you going?
We're going very well. Now, it's been sort of floating for the last little while that this appointment was going to be made. When did you first get told that this was going to be yours?
It was probably around 24 hours ago. We were able to sort of lock it away. It's been quite a process that the club's gone through, and look, a really good one, actually, a really professional one. They ran it really well. It was just final prior to the grand final. That we made contact, and then basically we left it until post that grand final to begin the process. And look, it was fantastic. I learned a lot about the club over that period. And it wasn't until a couple of days ago that we were able to lock things away and now look to the future. But it's a real positive one.
Had there not been, this is an interesting question, I suppose, in many respects, had there not been a job available, did you think you would have been ready to take a job had it not presented this opportunity?
I think over the last probably 2 years, I feel like, I've been looking for that next challenge. But I wanted to make sure the right challenge was there. I wanted to make sure that it was the right position. As you know, there's been a number of jobs that have become available. So, I didn't put my head in the ring for any of those. I just didn't feel that it was the right matchup. But look, the longer I spoke to the Adelaide Football Club throughout this process, the more I knew that it was a good match. That I could bring something that hopefully in the medium to longer term is going to help the club. And I knew the club was in a position that it suited me for some of the strengths that I bring as far as the coach goes.
It's interesting, Matthew. We've spoken about you a lot on our program, even back last year when you were a sought-after senior assistant coach and you made the move up to the Giants, that you were seen as this real sort of relationships guru, almost like a Dr. Phil.
Oh, Dr. Phil.
What's the secret to your leadership style and your coaching style where you've been able to get this reputation? I hope that doesn't embarrass you, the question.
Well, we look similar, Dr. Phil and I.
You're going to put a twang in your voice.
He's a pretty good operator. There's no secret to anything, really. I mean, I'm about relationships and I always have been. Part of that is just the character. That's just how I was brought up. I'm very much about putting others first. I really love working in a team environment. It goes right back to my playing days when I was I was lucky enough to be at Sydney during a period where we had an amazing group of players and a really strong coaching group, and we were able to develop a culture which ended up being called the Bloods culture. We didn't actually name it that. But what we basically worked on, we go back to those days, was putting others in front of yourself, prioritising others, and working together to try and achieve a goal. And we were able to do that in 2005. So off the back of that, when you experience a success like that, you take it through with you. And I've noticed across the journey since playing and getting into coaching and the sort of 10 years I've spent in at the AFL level in that, those coaching ranks and travelling overseas, is the teams that are successful are the ones that everyone's bought in and everyone's on the same page. And you know, spent some time overseas in Seattle and was able to, you know, get inside the Seahawks and have a look around there at some of their line meetings and training sessions. And they have the same vibe around the place. So I've stuck with that, and I guess that's where the relationship part comes from. I prioritise my players, you know, number one, and we get them what they need because, you know, ultimately they're the ones who are performing on the ground each weekend.
So then the extension of that question is the Adelaide position was always going to be a challenge for whoever took it on based on what's happened over the last couple of years. Was that, so is that daunting for you, or is it with your background you think this is the one I really want because I reckon I can make change?
Well, you've probably hit the nail on the head there. I mean, that's how I felt. The job was, I'm the right person for the job. That's how I began to feel. And so that made it a lot easier throughout the interview process, you know, sitting down with the panel. It was basically, I was just telling them who I was and talking to them about the actual position of what they're looking for. So, you know, even over the last 24 hours to get around the playing group, I've been able to chat to as many of the players as I can. Obviously not all because they're on a break and we want to respect that. But the priority, you know, number one priority is to get around the boys and you know, make sure that I'm there for them. And it's been fantastic. And I've been able to talk to, you know, Rory, from the captain, Rory Sloane, right down to some of the younger guys who are coming through. And it's a really exciting list. It's got a great core group of players there. We're going to lose some experience this year throughout this trade period. And when you lose experience, it just creates opportunity for some of these younger guys to for us to see them, to get them into the first side, to get them playing. And I've no doubt some of them will really step up.
Yeah, we're just talking about Josh Jenkins before. Is there any way that he could come back and play at Adelaide under yourself now that you're there, Matty?
Yeah. Look, there is. I mean, where Josh's situation is at, and it's a tough one because it's, you know, it's coming down to the wire. But, you know, we know Josh has requested a trade and wants to have a look at that. We understand that and we're respectful of that. We also know he's got a very good manager in Paul Connors. So these things, you know, these things normally get done, and so we'll see how that plays out. And then, if, you know, depending on how that does play out, well, you know, I really look forward to having a chat to him at the end of it. If it doesn't work out, it's a tough one for me, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Josh at this point. But I definitely will be doing that over the next 24 hours.
Ben Lachlan has had a busy couple of weeks at the Caribbean Premier League. It didn't turn out exactly as he would have liked for the Guyana Amazon Warriors, but he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Ben.
How are you going?
We're going very well, thank you, mate. We've talked a lot about T20 competitions on this program for the last couple of years, all across the globe. The Caribbean version, where you played with the Amazon Warriors, to losing the final, unfortunately, to the Tridents. How different is it?
It's good fun. They claim to be the biggest party in sport, and they probably live up to that. It's a very enjoyable social atmosphere at the game. So, yeah, it's definitely good fun.
So how has that changed your experience of what cricket was in your head to what it is now when you're able to play in these sort of tournaments?
Oh, from, yeah, when I first started, yeah, things have changed a fair bit, I suppose, yeah. So it's awesome to be able to travel around the world and meet all new players and new cultures and see different parts around the world. But, yeah, it's definitely a long way from back in the day when my old man was playing, that's for sure.
Very different. And you've had so many experiences and impacts in big games. Can you pinpoint a highlight or what you've enjoyed most across those different experiences?
When we won with Adelaide 22 years ago with the Strikers, that was pretty awesome, being your home comp and all that. But the IPL stuff's pretty amazing. Getting to play with some big names over there and some really big games is cool. But, yeah, definitely the ones at home where you're really invested in and, yeah, put a lot of work in, they're quite memorable.
So the Amazon Warriors, you went on this amazing streak that unfortunately fell down in the final. How gutted were you at the end of that? Because it was a great run.
Yeah, pretty disappointing. It was a pretty somber change room, to be honest. But, yeah, that's the joys of T20, isn't it? Like, finals are normally 50-50 contests, I suppose, and we probably played our worst game in the final. We weren't horrible. We just didn't nail like we had done all the other games. So, yeah, it's probably going to hurt for a couple of weeks, but when you look back and getting 11 from 11 and then losing the finals, a pretty good effort still.
And the level of the Caribbean Premier League, we have Haisto part of our show in here, and he was quite surprised at how good the standard was this year. What's your view on it all?
Yeah, the talent is ridiculous. And in my team especially, we probably had five guys under 22 who are going to play for the West Indies very soon or in the next series. So, the talent's just top shelf. So they lack a little bit in game sense and maturity, which Sherwood Malik, our captain, was really, really hard on in trying to upskill them really fast. But the actual talent is ridiculous. And I think it's all... My theory is this is the first generation that have grown up watching Gale and Pollard just play T20 cricket, and they're just starting to see the fruits of all that come through. So I have no doubt they are going to be a massive powerhouse in the next 5 years.
And for you, I'm guessing a bit of a different experience living over in the Caribbean for that period of time. What's life like over there?
It's you don't really want to be too negative on it, but it's a lot different to what you get at home. I'm married with two kids now, so home life's very enjoyable and quite hectic, but... Yeah, when you're away and in a hotel room a lot of the time, it can get you down a bit. But the group that we had was such an energetic young bunch. It sort of, made it really enjoyable. So, yeah, as you grow up, things change a bit in your life. But, it's all different experiences.
Talk some hoops now because we've got a very special guest in the studio who used to be just the CEO of the NBL. That was all he was, the CEO. But he's been dismissed of those duties because he's been elevated to the commissioner. It's a much better term. Jeremy Lulliger joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jeremy.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's the commissioner, Jeremy. Yeah. You're the commish. It's fantastic.
I do like the saying, the commish. That's how I was always introduced over in the US anyway. And that was part of the reason is that everyone over there understood the role as the commish. So,
does the role actually change?
It has changed a little bit. I'm certainly doing far less of the day-to-day now. We've got some fantastic senior execs in the office who look after the day-to-day operations of the business, and it gives me more of an opportunity to concentrate on external stakeholder relations. You know, that's a... Basketball being a global sport is a pretty political commodity. Mm. So you've got all your domestic stakeholders here in Basketball Australia and governments and all the rest. But then managing those relationships with the NBA, the CBA, FIBA, it's a full-time gig in itself. And now that we are becoming a truly global league as well, it's taking up a lot more of everyone's time.
And I think that's an interesting point, probably the first port of call for us with you this morning, is that we get caught up as basketball fans in Australia about the NBL being an Australian product, but no longer is that the case, is it? It's becoming a product that's available to anyone on the planet.
Yeah, and certainly we don't dismiss the local audience. First and foremost, we're an Australian-New Zealand basketball league.
Yep.
And we will never lose sight of the fact that our core business is putting bums on seats and getting eyes on TV sets here in Australia and New Zealand and around the region. And certainly all the rules are skewed that way to make sure that the majority of our talent is local and there is much greater local interest in local players. So that will always be our core asset and our core focus. But when we set out on this mission 4 or 5 years ago to revolutionise the NBL, it was always on the premise that this is a global sport played and understood in over 270 countries around the world. We happen to be very, very good at it and always have been. And no one had really taken that message to the world before. Mm. And what it required was a shift in mindset to begin with, that we are actually credible. And yeah, we're not the NBA, but we're probably the second or third best league in the world. And out of a lot of countries out there who have professional basketball leagues, that's not a bad stake to claim. But we are one of the best leagues in the world. We have some of the best players in the world. As a country, both men's and women's national teams are right up there in the world rankings.
Yep.
And we should be taking the product to the world. But the broadcast had never been seen outside of Australia and New Zealand. Mm. We're now broadcast live into 33 countries around the world, and now we have global deals on streaming platforms like Facebook Watch and Twitch that mean that we've got audiences outside of Australia that far exceed what we're generating here in Australia. So they're different products, but both are very, very relevant to our sustainability.
Now I'm a 42-year-old middle-aged white dude who's pretty...
Hang on a sec. We're not middle-aged.
Well, where we are?
No,
we're 42, mate.
No, we're not.
100%.
We're not
there. Trust us. 100%. We're middle-aged.
Nah.
Jump on board. Just embrace it. No, we're 42-year-old middle-aged white dude, you and I. She's white chick.
The three of us are.
Exactly.
Well,
she's not a dude.
Yeah.
She's
a
chick.
A
but regardless, we're middle-aged people stuck in our ways in terms of consuming sport. You talk about streaming and the opportunities there from the NBL's perspective. And this Twitch thing, which I've seen on my smart TV. I've never pressed the button, but I've seen it. What does it open up, these streaming
press
opportunities?
Press that button, it's like going down the rabbit hole. I can tell you. And that's the thing that really excited us about Twitch in the first place. I think the simplest way to explain it is, it's the equivalent of YouTube where the primary content was, and this is going back away now, the primary content was all about computer games, streaming, and esports.
Right.
Now, YouTube, on the other hand, was all about general content.
Yep.
But it is now skewing towards people who are live streaming, and you see a lot more gaming content on there, and that's what generates big audiences for YouTube. Twitch has gone the other way around. It started with gaming. It's now moving into what they call alternative content, which for us is probably mainstream content.
Yep.
And now they're going into live traditional sporting content as well. The difference between YouTube and Twitch is the user base. The Twitch user base, the typical fan on Twitch is somewhere between a 12 and a 25-year-old, both male and female, but probably slightly skewed towards male.
Yep.
But the engagement is through the roof. So the average user time, when someone clicks on Twitch and starts watching, the average time that they stay is just under 2 hours.
Wow.
For YouTube, that's under 5 minutes, I'm told. So they're a really engaged, interactive audience who like to participate with and interact with the content that's on their screen. So our broadcast on Twitch, you can't just, or you can, but you don't have to just watch the game. You can chat at the same time with other people who are watching the game. You can chat with the commentary team. You can take part in games and promotions and quizzes. You can deep dive into all of the stats. You can buy your merchandise, all without ever having to leave that live viewing experience.
Wow.
But the really cool bit for me, and I'm waffling a little bit because I'm excited about it, but there's this concept called co-streaming, where we put our content up on Twitch, on the official NBL channel,
yep.
But then we put a secondary stream up that is the vision, all the graphics, all the ambient sound effects, but none of the commentary. And then we set it free for every user out there on the Twitch community to stream that content on their page, on their channel, and add their own commentary over the top of it.
Wow.
So the three of you could use your three separate Twitch accounts and do your own commentary of an NBL game and broadcast it to your...
We should do that.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got a huge following on Twitch, Harv.
Massive. I'm about to. Yeah.
So we can use official guests to do alternative commentary for NBL games, but then also there are users out there who have hundreds of thousands and even millions of followers on Twitch. And it's now very easy for us to partner with them. And they can stream our content to their fan base, and we'll pick up hundreds of thousands of viewers just by virtue of them showing it, who have probably never even heard of the NBL before, let alone watched a game. And once they see the quality of the content, the hope is that they come back.
It's almost mind-boggling how quickly all this is changing, isn't it?
It really is.
How do you keep on top of all those different things as they're coming up?
One of the answers is the average age of the people in our office is much lower than my own, and they keep us abreast of all of these developments. But you know, part of it is just keeping your finger on the pulse of what's actually happening out there in the younger generation that is the real future of our fan base as basketball and the NBL. I mean, the NBA always tell us the statistic when they come here to Australia that they know that if they have a fan by the age of 12, they're likely to be a fan for life. And then also, the earlier you get that fan on board, the greater the profitability over their life cycle as a fan. So you really need to be speaking to that younger generation in order to build yourself a sustainable future. Yeah. And so it's a time-consuming exercise.
It is fascinating. And you know, we think of the AFL rights are up in 3 years, and there's the talk of Amazon being involved. And I think that's scary for a lot of middle-aged people about what that all means to, you know, and I'm one of those people that just want to have my sport on the one TV with one control.
Yeah.
But it is changing, and that's the reality. So how do you commercialise it? And how do you keep tabs of how many people are actually watching your product?
Yeah, it's a good question. Commercialising it is interesting. And you make the interesting point there about Amazon. And Amazon Prime is going to come to Australia in a big way. Amazon owns 100% of Twitch. The fact that you said, Harv, that you saw Twitch on your smart TV directly talks to the point that you just made about you're wanting it to have it on one platform, one remote. Mm. You now do. You can watch Twitch, Amazon Prime, Netflix, whatever it is. Mm.
Now, Jeremy, you're talking to me. I didn't even know I had Netflix on my television for 3 years.
Do you need me to explain what Netflix is as well?
One day it just popped up. And I thought, didn't know I had it.
There you go. So imagine what the future holds 3 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
And the amount of content that you'll have on your smart TV. But commercialising and understanding your ratings, it's a brave new world. Mm. And they call them OTT, over-the-top platforms. report their ratings in a very different way to traditional TV. So you tend to talk about the reach of the audience rather than your average or your peak.
Yes.
Or, yeah, so it tends to be reach. And it's a double-edged sword dealing with digital, because the reality is they have much greater accuracy as to how many people you are reaching and who tune in and for how long, but they also tend to report less. It's a newer industry, and I think they can get away with reporting less on those statistics. But it is great to know, you know, almost immediately after a game, that you've had a reach of X number of people. Mm. And our first game on Facebook Watch last Sunday with LaMelo Ball playing his first game in the NBL, it was in a friendly time zone. It was 3 p.m. here in Australia, which meant that it was on sort of late night over in the US.
Yeah.
Good audience base. We did over a million viewers outside of Australia.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, and about 750,000 of them were live. We had about 250,000 watching it on either delay or replay on Facebook, which is unbelievable. The most watched NBL game in history.
There's a question I've been dying to ask you for weeks about LaMelo.
Mm.
Was there a feeling from the NBL of we got to get him into a Melbourne or a Sydney or even a Brisbane market? Or because it seemed that him being off Broadway was an interesting choice. How did that all take place?
Yeah, no, it was... I won't say it was exactly the opposite, but there was always a conversation there about, to use your wording, having him off Broadway.
Yep.
Because he's actually a wonderful young man, doesn't particularly like the spotlight, wants to play basketball, wants to concentrate on...
In his family, that's unusual.
Well...
It seems.
Certainly, he's probably the quietest of the lot of them, put it that way. And all he wants to do is get taken as the number one draft pick next year. That's his ambition. He has no, he harbours no ambitions to be a reality TV superstar.
Mm.
So having him down in the Illawarra for us was a bit of a risk mitigation exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, the circus follows him everywhere.
Mm.
You could put him in Girilderie and the folks from Facebook would be there to record it. So it's been a really steep learning curve for everyone involved. He's got really good management behind him. He's now represented by CAA, who's one of the biggest agencies in the US from a basketball management point of view.
Is that LeBron's agency?
No, LeBron is with Clutch, but CAA, for example, the guys who are handling LaMelo also handle Paul George. You know, they're big time.
Big times, yeah.
And they are very, very concerted to make sure that he has every opportunity to go as high as he can in the draft. And, you know, he's when we signed him, I think he was ranked in the 40s in terms of his likely prospects. He's now expected to go top three. And they are adamant that he'll be the number one draft pick, and I wouldn't bet against him because he's a prodigious young talent.
And this is to be the iceberg for the NBL, that it becomes the nursery of champions.
Absolutely.
It legitimately does.
Absolutely. So LaMelo, RJ, Diddy.
Going back to Warriors, how did this whole the whole concept happen? LaMelo Ball, normally you go to college, you become the number one pick through playing in college.
Mm.
How does the NBL come into this conversation?
Right, so... 2 years ago, we embarked on this project called Next Stars.
Yep.
And it was off the back of the success that we had with a guy by the name of Terrence Ferguson, who didn't go to college, came out of high school and played with the Adelaide 36ers, and went number 21 in the draft to the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yep.
He's now in their starting five every other game. You know, he's a seriously talented guy. But he didn't blow the competition away here in Australia. He was good. He was always going to be very good, and he was... young and certainly had a much higher ceiling. But it opened our eyes to the fact that, hey, there was an opportunity here for us to start a nationally regulated program to try and attract talent who either wasn't eligible to go to college or didn't want to go to college.
Yep.
And we actively started campaigning to those guys. The following year, we picked up Brian Bowen Jr., who was ineligible to go to college. He sort of proved the system for us. He's now about to play his first game with the Indiana Pacers in about a week.
Yep.
So that was a successful proof of concept, and it allowed us to go into the market in a big way. And I can tell you more about the LaMelo RJ conversations if you want, but it was a whirlwind from there, really. And once we signed RJ Hampton, announced live on ESPN in prime time, that really opened the floodgates.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.